or because of something else, Clary wasn't sure.
"Alec," said Jace, his eyes locked with his friend's.
"No. You can't."
Alec swallowed.
"We're going," he said.
He spoke the words like an apology.
"Jace, a request from the Seely Court. It would be stupid to ignore it. Besides, Isabel's probably already told them we're coming."
"There is no chance I'm going to let you do this, Alec," Jace said in a dangerous voice.
"I'll wrestle you to the ground if I have to."
"Well, that does sound tempting," said Magnus, flipping his long silk sleeves back. "There is another way."
"What other way? This is a directive from the Clave. I can't just weasel out of it."
"But I can," Magnus grinned.
"Never doubt my weaseling abilities, Shadowhunter, for they are epic and memorable in their scope. I specifically enchanted the contract with the Inquisitor so that I could let you go for a short time if I desired, as long as another of the Nephilim was willing to take your place."
"Where are we going to find another?"
"Oh," Alec said meekly, "you mean me."
Jace's eyebrows shot up.
"Oh, now you don't want to go to the Seely Court?"
Alec flushed.
"I think it's more important for you to go than me. You're Valentine's son. I'm sure you're the one the Queen really wants to see. Besides, you're charming."
Jace glared at him.
"Maybe not at the moment," Alec amended, "but you're usually charming, and fairies are very susceptible to charm.
Plus, if you stay here, I've got the whole first season of Gilligan's Island on DVD," Magnus said.
"No one could turn that down," said Jace.
He still wouldn't look at Clary.
"Isabel can meet you in the park by Turtle Pond," said Alec. "She knows the secret entrance to the court. She'll be waiting."
"And one last thing," Magnus said, jabbing a ringed finger at Jace.
"Try not to get yourself killed in the Seely Court. If you die, I'll have a lot of explaining to do."
At that, Jace broke into a grin. It was an unsettling grin, less a flash of amusement than the gleam of an unsheathed blade.
"You know," he said, "I have a feeling that that's going to be the case whether I get myself killed or not."
Thick tendrils of moss and plants surrounded the rim of Turtle Pond like a bordering of green lace. The surface of the water was still, rippled here and there in the wake of drifting ducks, or dimpled by the silvery flick of a fish's tail. There was a small wooden gazebo built out over the water. Isabel was sitting in it, staring out across the lake. She looked like a princess in a fairy tale, waiting at the top of her tower for someone to ride up and rescue her. Not that traditional princess behavior was like Isabel at all. Isabel, with her whip and boots and knives, would chop anyone who tried to pen her up in a tower into pieces, build a bridge out of the remains, and walk carelessly to freedom, her hair looking fabulous the entire time. This made Isabel a hard person to like, though Clary was trying.
"Izzy," said Jace, as they neared the pond, and she jumped up and spun around. Her smile was dazzling.
"Jace!"
She flew at him and hugged him.
Now that was the way sisters were supposed to act, Clary thought. Not all stiff and weird and peculiar, but happy and loving. Watching Jace hug Isabel, she tried to school her features into a happy and loving expression.
"Are you all right?" Simon asked with some concern. "Your eyes are crossing."
"I'm fine." Clary abandoned the attempt.
"Are you sure? You look sort of contorted."
"Something I ate."
Isabel drifted over, Jace a pace behind her. She was wearing a long black dress with boots and an even longer cutaway coat of soft green velvet, the color of moss.
"I can't believe you did it," she exclaimed. "How did you get Magnus to let Jace leave?"
"Traded him for Alec," Clary said.
Isabel looked mildly alarmed.
"Not permanently?"
"No," said Jace. "Just for a few hours. Unless I don't come back," he added thoughtfully. "In which case, maybe he does get to keep Alec. Think of it as a lease with an option to buy."
Isabel looked dubious. "Mom and Dad won't be pleased if they find out."
"That you freed a possible criminal by trading away your brother to a warlock who looks like a gay Sonic the Hedgehog and dresses like the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?" Simon inquired.
"No, probably not."
Jace looked at him thoughtfully.
"Is there some particular reason that you're here, I'm not so sure we should be bringing you to the Seelie Court. They hate mundanes.
Simon rolled his eyes upward.
Not this again.
Not what again? Said Clary.
Every time I annoy him, he retreats into his no mundanes allowed treehouse.
Simon pointed at Jace.
Let me remind you, the last time you wanted to leave me behind, I saved all your lives.
Sure, said Jace. One time.
The fairy courts are dangerous, cut in Isabel. Even your skill with the bow won't help you. It's not that kind of danger.
I can take care of myself, said Simon.
A sharp wind had come up. It blew drying leaves across the gravel at their feet and made Simon shiver. He dug his hands into the wool-lined pockets of his jacket.
You don't have to come, Clary said.
He looked at her, a steady, measured look. She remembered him back at Luke's, calling her my girlfriend with no measure of doubt or indecision. Whatever else she could say about Simon, he knew what he wanted.
Yeah, he said, I do.
Jace made a noise under his breath.
Then I suppose we're ready, he said. Don't expect any special consideration, mundane. Look on the bright side, said Simon. If they need a human sacrifice, you can always offer me. I'm not sure the rest of you qualify, anyway.
Jace brightened.
It's always nice when someone volunteers to be the first up against the wall.
Come on, Isabel said. The door is about to open.
Clary glanced around. The sun had set completely and the moon was up, a wedge of creamy white casting its reflection onto the pond. It wasn't quite full, but shadowed at one edge, giving it the look of a half-lidded eye. Night wind rattled the tree branches, knocking them against one another with a sound like hollow bones.
Where do we go? Clary asked. Where's the door?
Isabel's smile was like a whispered secret.
Follow me.
She moved down to the edge of the water, her boots leaving deep impressions in the wet mud. Clary followed, glad she was wearing jeans and not a skirt as Isabel hiked her coat and dress up over her knees, leaving her slim white legs bare over her boots. Her skin was covered in marks like licks of black fire. Simon, behind her, swore as he slipped in the mud. Jace moved automatically to steady him as they all turned. Simon jerked his arm back.
I don't need your help.
Stop it!
Isabel tapped a booted foot in the shallow water at the lake's edge.
Both of you. In fact, all three of you. If we don't stick together in the Seelie Court, we're dead.
But I haven't, Clary started.
Maybe you haven't, but the way you let those two act.
Isabel indicated the boys with a disdainful wave of her hand.
I can't tell them what to do.
Why not? The other girl demanded.
Honestly, Clary, if you don't start utilizing a bit of your natural feminine superiority, I just don't know what I'll do with you.
She turned toward the pond, then spun around again.
And lest I forget, she added sternly, for the love of the angel, don't eat or drink anything while we're underground, any of you, okay?
Underground, said Simon worriedly. Nobody said anything about underground.
Isabel threw up her hands and splashed out into the pond. Her green velvet coat swirled out around her like an enormous lily pad.
Come on. We only have until the moon moves.
The moon what?
Shaking her head, Clary stepped out into the pond. The water was shallow and clear. In the bright starlight, she could see the black shapes of tiny darting fish moving past her ankles. She gritted her teeth as she waded farther out into the pond. The cold was intense. Behind her, Jace moved out into the water with a contained grace that barely rippled the surface. Simon, behind him, was splashing and cursing. Isabel, having reached the center of the pond, paused there, up to her ribcage in water. She held out her hand toward Clary.
Stop.
Clary stopped. Just in front of her, the reflection of the moon glimmered atop the water like a huge, silvery dinner plate. Some part of her knew that it didn't work like this. The moon was supposed to move away from you as you approached, ever receding. But here it was, hovering just on the surface of the water, as if it were anchored in place.
Jace, you go first, Isabel said and beckoned him. Come on.
He brushed past Clary, smelling of wet leather and char. She saw him smile as he turned, and then he stepped backward into the reflection of the moon and vanished.
Okay, said Simon unhappily. Okay, that was weird.
Clary glanced back at him.
He was only hip-deep in water, but he was shivering, his hands hugging his elbows. She smiled at him and took a step backward, feeling a shock of icier cold when she moved into the shimmering silver reflection. She teetered for a moment, as if she'd lost her balance on the highest rung of a ladder, and then fell backward into darkness as the moon swallowed her up. She hit packed earth, stumbled, and felt a hand on her arm steadying her. It was Jace.
"Easy does it," he said, and let her go.
She was soaking wet, rivulets of cold water running down the back of her shirt, her damp hair clinging to her face. Her drenched clothes felt as if they weighed a ton. They were in a hollowed-out dirt corridor, illuminated by faintly glowing moss. A tangle of dangling vines formed a curtain at one end of the corridor, and long, hairy tendrils hung like dead snakes from the ceiling. Tree roots, Clary realized. They were underground. And it was cold down here. Cold enough to make her breath puff out in an icy mist when she exhaled.
Cold?
Jace was soaking wet, too, his light hair almost colorless where it stuck to his cheeks and forehead. Water ran from his wet jeans and jacket, and made the white shirt he was wearing transparent. She could see the dark lines of his permanent marks through it and the faint scar on his shoulder. She looked away quickly. Water clung to her lashes, blurring her vision like tears. I'm fine.
You don't look fine.
He moved closer, and she could feel the warmth of him even through his wet clothes and hers, thawing her icy skin. A dark shape hurtled by, just out of the corner of her eye, and hit the ground with a thud. It was Simon, also soaking wet. He rolled onto his knees and looked around frantically.
My glasses. I've got them.
Clary was used to retrieving Simon's glasses for him during soccer games. They always seemed to fall just under his feet where they were inevitably stepped on. Here you go. He slid them on, scraping dirt off the lenses.
Thanks.
Clary could feel Jace watching them, feel his gaze like a weight on her shoulders. She wondered if Simon could too. He stood up with a frown, just as Isabel dropped out of the heavens, landing gracefully on her feet. Water ran from her long, streaming hair and weighed down her heavy velvet coat, but she barely seemed to notice.
Ooh, that was fun!
That does it, said Jace. I'm going to get you a dictionary for Christmas this year.
Why? Isabel said.
So you can look up fun. I'm not sure you know what it means.
Isabel pulled the long, heavy mass of her wet hair forward and wrung it out as if it were wet washing.
You're raining on my parade.
It's a pretty wet parade already, if you hadn't noticed.
Jace glanced around. Now what? Which way do we go?
Neither way, said Isabel. We wait here and they come and get us.
Clary was not impressed by this suggestion. How do they know we're here? Is there a doorbell we have to ring or something?
The court knows all that happens in their lands. Our presence won't go unnoticed.
Simon looked at her with suspicion. And how do you know so much about fairies and the Seely court, anyway? Isabel, to everyone's surprise, blushed. A moment later, the curtain of vines was drawn aside, and a fairy stepped through it, shaking back his long hair. Clary had seen some of the fae before at Magnus's party, and had been struck by both their cold beauty and a certain wild unearthliness they possessed even when they were dancing and drinking. This fairy was no exception. His hair fell in blue-black sheets around a cool, sharp, lovely face. His eyes were green as vines or moss, and there was the shape of a leaf, either a birthmark or tattoo, across one of his cheekbones. He wore an armor of a silvery brown like the bark of trees in winter, and when he moved, the armor flashed a multitude of colors: peat black, moss green, ash gray, sky blue. Isabel gave a cry and jumped into his arms.
Meliorn!
Ah, said Simon, quietly and not without amusement. So that's how she knows.
The fairy, Meliorn, looked down at her gravely, then detached her and set her gently aside.
This is not a time for a fiction, he said. The Queen of the Seely Court has requested an audience with the three Nephilim among you. Will you come?
Clary put a protective hand on Simon's shoulder.
What about our friend?
Meliorn looked impassive.
Mundane humans are not permitted in the court.
I wish someone had mentioned that earlier, said Simon, to no one in particular. I take it I'm just supposed to wait out here until vines start growing on me.
Meliorn considered.
That might offer significant amusement.
Simon's not an ordinary mundane. He can be trusted, Jay said, startling them all, and Simon more than the rest. Clary could tell Simon was surprised because he stared at Jace without offering a single smart remark.
He has fought many battles with us.
By which you mean one battle, muttered Simon. Two, if you count the one where I was a rat.
We will not enter the Seely Court without Simon, Clary said, her hand still on Simon's shoulder. Your queen requested this audience with us, remember? It wasn't our idea to come here.
There was a spark of dark amusement in Meliorn's green eyes.
As you wish, he said.
Let it not be said that the Seely Court does not respect the desires of its guests.
He spun on a perfectly booted heel and began to lead them down the corridor without pausing to see if they were following him. Isabel hurried to walk alongside him, leaving Jace, Clary, and Simon to follow the two of them in silence.
Are you allowed to date fairies? Clary asked finally. Would the Lightwoods be cool with Isabel and what's his name?
Meliorn, put in Simon.
Meliorn going out?
I'm not sure they're going out, Jay said, weighting the last two words with a heavy irony. I'd guess they mostly stay in, or in this case, under.
You sound like you disapprove.
Simon pushed a tree root aside. They had moved from a dirt-walled corridor to one lined with smooth stones, only the occasional root snaking down between the stones from above. The floor was some kind of polished hard stuff, not marble, but stone veined and flaked with lines of shimmering material like powdered jewels.
I don't disapprove exactly, said Jace. The fairies are known to dally with the occasional mortal, but they always end in abandoning them, usually the worse for wear.
His words sent a shiver down Clary's spine. At that moment, Isabel laughed, and Clary could see now why Jace had dropped his voice, because the stone walls threw Isabel's voice back to them, amplified and echoing, so that Isabel's laughter seemed to bounce off the walls.
You're so funny!
She tripped as the heel of her boot caught between two stones, and Meliorn caught and righted her without changing expression.
I do not understand how you humans can walk in shoes that are that tall.
It's my motto, said Isabel, with a sultry smile. Nothing less than 7 inches.
Meliorn gazed at her stonily.
I'm talking about my heels, she said. It's a pun. You know, a play on...
Come, the fairy knight said. The queen will be growing impatient.
He headed down the corridor without giving Isabel a second glance.
I forgot, Isabel muttered as the rest of them caught up to her. Fairies have no sense of humor.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, said Jace. There's a pixie nightclub downtown called Hot Wings, not, he added, that I have ever been there.
Simon looked at Jace, opened his mouth as if he intended to ask him a question, then seemed to think better of it. He closed his mouth with a snap, just as the corridor opened out into a wide room whose floor was packed dirt and whose walls were lined with high stone pillars, twined all over with vines and bright flowers bursting with color. Thin cloths were hung between the pillars, dyed a soft blue that was almost the exact hue of the sky. The room was filled with light, though Clary could see no torches, and the overall effect was of a summer pavilion in bright sunshine rather than a dirt and stone room underground. Clary's first impression was that she was outside. Her second was that the room was full of people. There was a strange, sweet music playing, flawed with sweet, sour notes, a sort of aural equivalent of honey mixed with lemon juice, and there was a circle of fairies dancing to the music, their feet barely seeming to skim the floor. Their hair, blue, black, brown, and scarlet, metal gold and ice white, flew like banners. She could see why they were called the Fair Folk, for they were fair indeed with their pale, lovely faces, their wings of lilac and gold and blue. How could she have believed Jace that they meant to harm her? The music that had jarred her ears at first now sounded only sweet. She felt the urge to toss her own hair and to move her own feet in the dance. The music told her that if she did that, she too would be so light that her feet would barely touch the earth. She took a step forward and was jerked back by a hand on her arm. Jace was glaring at her, his golden eyes bright as a cat's.
If you dance with them, he said in a low voice, you'll dance until you die.
Clary blinked at him. She felt as if she'd been pulled out of a dream, groggy and half awake. Her voice slurred when she spoke.
What?
Jace made an impatient noise.
He had a stele in his hand. She hadn't seen him take it out. He gripped her wrist and inscribed a quick, stinging mark onto the skin of her inner arm.
"Now look."
She looked again and froze. The faces that had seemed so lovely to her were still lovely, yet behind them lurked something vulpine, almost feral. The girl with the pink and blue wings beckoned, and Clary saw that her fingers were made of twigs, budded with closed leaves. Her eyes were entirely black, without iris or pupil. The boy dancing next to her had poison green skin and curling horns twisting from his temples. When he turned in the dance, his coat fell open, and Clary saw that beneath it his chest was an empty rib cage. Ribbons were woven through his bare rib bones, possibly to make him look more festive. Clary's stomach lurched.
"Come on."
Jace pushed her, and she stumbled forward. When she regained her balance, she looked around anxiously for Simon. He was up ahead, and she saw that Isabel had a firm grip on him. This once, she didn't mind. She doubted Simon would have made it through the room on his own. Skirting the circle of dancers, they made their way to the far end of the room and through a parted curtain of blue silk. It was a relief to be out of the room and into another corridor, this one carved from a glossy brown material like the outside of a nut. Isabel let go of Simon and he stopped walking immediately. When Clary caught up to him, she saw that this was because Isabel had tied her scarf across his eyes. He was fiddling with the knot when Clary reached him.
"Let me get it," she said, and he went still while she untied him and handed the scarf back to Isabel with a nod of thanks.
Simon pushed his hair back. It was damp where the scarf had held it down.
"That was some music," he observed. "A little bit country, a little bit rock and roll."
Meliorn, who had paused to wait for them, frowned.
"You didn't care for it."
"I cared for it a little too much," Clary said. "What was that supposed to be, some kind of test or a joke?" He shrugged.
"I'm used to mortals who are easily swayed by our fairy glamours. Not so the Nephilim. I thought you had protections."
"She does," Jay said, meeting Meliorn's jade-green gaze with his own.
Meliorn only shrugged and began walking again. Simon kept pace beside Clary for a few moments without speaking before he said,
"So, what did I miss? Naked dancing ladies?"
Clary thought of the male fairy's torn-open ribs and shuddered.
"Nothing that pleasant."
"There are ways for a human to join the fairy revels," Isabel, who had been eavesdropping, put in. "If they give you a token, like a leaf or a flower, to hold on to, and you keep it through the night, you'll be fine in the morning. Or if you go with a fairy for a companion."
She shot a glance at Meliorn, but he had reached a leafy screen set into the wall and paused there.
"These are the queen's chambers," he said. "She's come from her court in the north to see about the child's death. If there's to be war, she wants to be the one declaring it."
Up close, Clary could see that the screen was made of thickly woven vines, budded with amber droplets. He drew the vines apart and ushered them into the chamber on the other side. Jace ducked through first, followed by Clary. She straightened up, looking around her curiously. The room itself was plain. The earthen walls hung with pale fabric. Will-o'-the-wisps glowed in glass jars. A lovely woman reclined on a low couch surrounded by what must have been her courtiers, a motley assortment of fairies, from tiny sprites to what looked like lovely human girls with long hair, if you discounted their black, pupilless eyes.
"My queen," said Meliorn, bowing low, "I have brought the Nephilim to you."
The queen sat up straight. She had long scarlet hair that seemed to float around her like autumn leaves in a breeze. Her eyes were clear blue as glass, her gaze sharp as a razor.
"Three of these are Nephilim," she said. "The other is a mundane."
Meliorn seemed to shrink back, but the queen didn't even look at him. Her gaze was on the shadow hunters. Clary could feel the weight of it, like a touch. Despite her loveliness, there was nothing fragile about the queen. She was as bright and hard to look at as a burning star.
"Our apologies, my lady."
Jace stepped forward, putting himself between the queen and his companions. His voice had changed its tone. There was something in the way he spoke now, something careful and delicate.
"The mundane is our responsibility. We owe him protection. Therefore we keep him with us."
The queen tilted her head to the side, like an interested bird,
All her attention was on Jace now.
A blood debt, she murmured. To a mundane.
He saved my life, Jace said.
Clary felt Simon stiffen beside her in surprise. She willed him not to show it. Fairies couldn't lie, Jace had said, and Jace wasn't lying either. Simon had saved his life. That just wasn't why they'd brought him with them. Clary began to appreciate what Jace had meant by creative truth-telling.
Please, my lady, we had hoped you would understand. We had heard you were as kind as you were beautiful. And in that case, well, Jace said, your kindness must be extreme indeed.
The queen smirked and leaned forward, gleaming hair falling to shadow her face. You are as charming as your father, Jonathan Morgenstern, she said, and gestured at the cushions scattered around the floor.
Come, sit beside me. Eat something. Drink. Rest yourselves. Talk is better with wet lips.
For a moment, Jace looked thrown. He hesitated. Meliorn leaned over to him and spoke softly.
It would be unwise to refuse the bounty of the Queen of the Seelie Court.
Isabel's eyes flicked toward him. Then she shrugged.
It won't hurt us just to sit down.
Meliorn led them over to a pile of silky cushions near the Queen's divan. Clary sat down cautiously, half expecting there to be some kind of big sharp root just waiting to poke her in the behind. It seemed like the sort of thing the Queen would find amusing, but nothing happened. The cushions were very comfortable. She settled back with the others around her. A pixie with bluish skin came toward them, carrying a platter with four silver cups on it. They each took a cup of the gold-toned liquid. There were rose petals floating on the top. Simon set his cup down beside him.
Don't you want any? The pixie asked.
The last fairy drink I had didn't agree with me, he muttered.
Clary barely heard him. The drink had a heady, intoxicating scent, richer and more delicious than roses. She picked a petal out of the liquid and crushed it between her thumb and forefinger, releasing more of the scent. Jace jostled her arm.
Don't drink any of it, he said under his breath.
But
just don't.
She set the cup down as Simon had done. Her finger and thumb were stained pink.
Now, said the queen, Meliorn tells me you claim to know who killed our child in the park last night. Though I tell you now it seems no mystery to me. A fairy child drained of blood. Is it that you bring me the name of a single vampire? But all vampires are at fault here, for the breaking of the law, and should be punished accordingly. Despite what may seem, we are not such a particular people.
Oh, come on, said Isabel. It isn't vampires.
Jace shot her a look. What Isabel means to say is that we're almost certain that the murderer is someone else. We think he may be trying to throw suspicion on the vampires to shield himself.
Have you proof of that?
Jace's tone was calm, but the shoulder that brushed Clary's was tight with tension.
Last night the Silent Brothers were slaughtered as well, and none of them were drained of blood.
And this has to do with our child, how? Dead Nephilim are a tragedy to Nephilim, but nothing to me.
Clary felt a sharp sting at her left hand. Looking down, she saw the tiny shape of a sprite darting away between the pillows. A red bead of blood had risen on her finger. She put the finger into her mouth with a wince. The sprites were cute, but they had a mean bite.
The soul sword was stolen as well, said Jace. You know of Malartek?
The sword that makes shadow hunters tell the truth, said the queen with dark amusement. We fey have no need of such an object.
It was taken by Valentine Morgenstern, said Jace. He killed the Silent Brothers to get it, and we think he killed the fairy as well. He needed the blood of a fairy child to effect a transformation on the sword, to make it a tool he could use.
And he won't stop, Isabel added. He needs more blood after that.
The queen's high eyebrows were arched even higher.
More blood of the folk?
No, Jay said, shooting a look at Isabel that Clary couldn't quite interpret. More downworlder blood. He needs the blood of a werewolf and a vampire.
The queen's eyes shone with reflected light.
That seems hardly our concern.
He killed one of yours, Isabel said. Don't you want revenge?
The queen's gaze brushed her like a moth's wing.
Not immediately, she said. We are a patient folk, for we have all the time in the world. Valentine Morgenstern is an old enemy of ours. But we have enemies older still. We are content to wait and watch.
He's summoning demons to him, Jace said, creating an army.
Demons, said the queen lightly, as her courtiers chattered behind her. Demons are your charge, are they not, Shadow Hunter? Is that not why you hold authority over us all? Because you are the ones who slay demons?
I'm not here to give you orders on behalf of the Clave. We came when you asked us because we thought that if you knew the truth, you'd help us.
Is that what you thought? The queen sat forward in her chair, her long hair rippling and alive. Remember, Shadow Hunter, there are those of us who chafe under the rule of the Clave. Perhaps we are tired of fighting your wars for you.
But it isn't our war alone, said Jace. Valentine hates downworlders more than he hates demons. If he defeats us, he'll go after you next.
The queen's eyes bored into him.
And when he does, said Jace, remember that it was a Shadow Hunter who warned you what was coming.
There was silence. Even the court had fallen silent, watching their lady. At last, the queen leaned back on her cushions and took a swallow from a silver chalice.
Warning me about your own parent, she said. I had thought you mortals capable of filial affection at least, and yet you seem to feel no loyalty toward Valentine, your father.
Jace said nothing. He seemed, for a change, lost for words. Sweetly, the queen went on.
Or perhaps this hostility of yours is the pretense. Love does make liars out of your kind.
But we don't love our father, said Clary, as Jace remained frighteningly silent.
We hate him. Do you?
The queen looked almost bored.
You know how the bonds of family are, my lady, said Jace, recovering his voice. They cling as tightly as vines. And sometimes, like vines, they cling tightly enough to kill.
The queen's lashes fluttered.
You would betray your own father for the sake of the Clave.
Even so, lady.
She laughed, a sound as bright and cold as icicles.
Who would have thought, she said, that Valentine's little experiments would turn on him?
Clary looked at Jace, but she could see by the expression on his face that he had no idea what the queen meant. It was Isabel who spoke.
Experiments?
The queen didn't even glance at her. Her gaze, a luminous blue, was fixed on Jace.
The fair folk are a people of secrets, she said. Our own and others. Ask your father, when next you see him, what blood runs in your veins, Jonathan.
I hadn't planned on asking him anything next time I see him, Jace said. But if you desire it, my lady, it will be done.
The queen's lips curved into a smile.
I think you are a liar, but a charming one. Charming enough that I will swear you this. Ask your father that question, and I will promise you what aid is in my power, should you strike against Valentine.
Jace smiled. Your generosity is as remarkable as your loveliness, lady. Clary made a gagging noise, but the queen looked pleased.
And I think we're done here now, Jace added, rising from the cushions.
He'd set his untouched drink down earlier, beside Isabel's. They all rose after him. Isabel was already talking to Meliorn in the corner by the vine door. He looked slightly hunted.
A moment, the queen rose. One of you must remain.
Jace paused halfway to the door and turned to face her.
What do you mean?
She stretched out one hand to indicate Clary.
Once our food or drink passes mortal lips, the mortal is ours. You know that, Shadow Hunter.
Clary was stunned.
But I didn't drink any of it.
She turned to Jace.
She's lying.
Fairies don't lie, he said, confusion and dawning anxiety chasing each other across his face.
He turned back to the queen.
I'm afraid you're mistaken, lady.
Look to her fingers and tell me she didn't lick them clean.
Simon and Isabel were staring now. Clary glanced down at her hand.
Of blood, she said. One of the sprites bit my finger. It was bleeding.
She remembered the sweet taste of the blood mixed with the juice on her finger. Panicked, she moved toward the vine door and stopped as what felt like invisible hands shoved her back into the room. She turned to Jace, stricken.
It's true.
Jace's face was flushed.
I suppose I should have expected a trick like that, he said to the queen,
his previous flirtatiousness gone.
Why are you doing this? What do you want from us?
The queen's voice was soft as spider's fur.
Perhaps I'm only curious, she said. It is not often I have young shadow hunters so close within my purview. Like us, you trace your ancestry to heaven. That intrigues me.
But unlike you, said Jace, there is nothing of hell in us.
You are mortal. You age, you die, the queen said dismissively. If that is not hell, pray tell me what is.
If you just want to study a shadow hunter, I won't be much use to you, Clary cut in.
Her hand ached where the sprite had bitten it, and she fought the urge to scream or burst into tears.
I don't know anything about shadow hunting. I hardly have any training. I'm the wrong person to pick.
On, she added silently. For the first time, the queen looked directly at her. Clary wanted to shrink back.
In truth, Clarissa Morgenstern, you are precisely the right person.
Her eyes gleamed as she took in Clary's discomfiture.
Thanks to the changes your father worked in you, you are not like other shadow hunters. Your gifts are different.
My gifts?
Clary was bewildered.
Yours is the gift of words that cannot be spoken, the queen said to her. And your brother's is the angel's own gift. Your father made sure of it, when your brother was a child and before you were ever born.
My father never gave me anything, Clary said. He didn't even give me a name.
Jace looked as blank as Clary felt.
Well, the fair folk do not lie, he said. They can be lied to. I think you have been the victim of a trick or joke, my lady. There is nothing special about myself or my sister.
How deftly you downplay your charms, said the queen with a laugh.
Though you must know you are not of the usual sort of human boy, Jonathan.
She looked from Clary to Jace to Isabel. Isabel closed her mouth, which had been wide open with a snap, and back at Jace again.
Could it be that you do not know? She murmured.
I know that I will not leave my sister here in your court, said Jace. And since there is nothing to be learned from either her or myself, perhaps you could do us the favor of releasing her? Now that you've had your fun, his eyes said, though his voice was polite and cool as water.
The queen's smile was wide and terrible.
What if I told you she could be freed by a kiss?
You want Jace to kiss you? Clary said, bewildered.
The queen burst out laughing, and immediately the courtiers copied her mirth. The laughter was a bizarre and inhuman mix of hoots, squeaks, and cackles, like the high shrieking of animals in pain.
Despite his charms, the queen said, that kiss will not free the girl.
The four looked at each other, startled.
I could kiss Meliorn, suggested Isabel.
Nor that,
nor anyone of my court.
Meliorn moved away from Isabel, who looked at her companions and threw up her hands.
I'm not kissing any of you, she said firmly, just so it's official.
That hardly seems necessary, Simon said, if a kiss is all.
He moved toward Clary, who was frozen in surprise. When he took her by the elbows, she had to fight the urge to push him away. Not that she hadn't kissed Simon before, but this would have been a peculiar situation even if kissing him were something she was entirely comfortable doing, which it wasn't. And yet it was the logical answer, wasn't it? Without being able to help it, she cast a quick look over her shoulder at Jace and saw him scowl.
No, said the queen in a voice like tinkling crystal. That is not what I want either.
Isabel rolled her eyes. Oh, for the angel's sake, look, if there's no other way of getting out of this, I'll kiss Simon. I've done it before. It wasn't that bad.
Thanks, said Simon. That's very flattering.
Alas, said the queen of the Seelie Court.
Her expression was sharp with a sort of cruel delight, and Clary wondered if it weren't a kiss she wanted so much as simply to watch them all squirm in discomfort.
I'm afraid that won't do either.
Well, I'm not kissing the mundane, said Jace. I'd rather stay down here and rot. Forever, said Simon. Forever is an awfully long time.
Jace raised his eyebrows.
I knew it, he said. You want to kiss me, don't you?
Simon threw up his hands in exasperation.
Of course not, but if... I guess it's true what they say, observed Jace. There are no straight men in the trenches.
That's atheists, jackass, said Simon furiously.
There are no atheists in the trenches.
Well, this is all very amusing, said the queen coolly, leaning forward. The kiss that will free the girl is the kiss that she most desires.
The cruel delight in her face and voice had sharpened, and her words seemed to stab into Clary's ears like needles.
Only that and nothing more.
Simon looked as if she had hit him. Clary wanted to reach out to him, but she stood frozen to the spot, too horrified to move.
Why are you doing this? Jace demanded.
I rather thought I was offering you a boon.
Jace flushed, but said nothing. He avoided looking at Clary. Simon said,
That's ridiculous. They're brother and sister.
The queen shrugged a delicate twitch of her shoulders.
Desire is not always lessened by disgust, nor can it be bestowed like a favor to those most deserving of it. And as my words bind my magic, so you can know the truth. If she doesn't desire his kiss, she won't be free.
Simon said something angrily, but Clary didn't hear him. Her ears were buzzing as if a swarm of angry bees were trapped inside her head. Simon whirled around, looking furious, and said,
You don't have to do this, Clary. It's a trick.
Not a trick, said Jace. A test.
Well, I don't know about you, Simon, said Isabel, her voice edged, but I'd like to get Clary out of here.
Like you'd kiss Alec, Simon said. Just because the Queen of the Seelie Court asked you to?
Sure I would. Isabel sounded annoyed. If the other option was being stuck in the Seelie Court forever, who cares anyway? It's just a kiss.
That's right.
It was Jace. Clary saw him at the blurred edge of her vision as he moved toward her and put a hand on her shoulder, turning her face to him.
It's just a kiss, he said.
And though his tone was harsh, his hands were inexplicably gentle. She let him turn her, looked up at him. His eyes were very dark, perhaps because it was so dim down here in the court, perhaps because of something else. She could see her reflection in each of his dilated pupils, a tiny image of herself inside his eyes. He said,
You can close your eyes and think of England if you like.
I've never even been to England, she said. But she shut her eyelids. She could feel the dank heaviness of her clothes, cold and itchy against her skin, and the cloying sweet air of the cave colder yet, and the weight of Jace's hands on her shoulders, the only things that were warm. And then he kissed her. She felt the brush of his lips, light at first, and her own opened automatically beneath the pressure. Almost against her will, she felt herself go fluid and pliant, stretching upward to twine her arms around his neck, the way that a sunflower twists toward light. His arms slid around her, his hands knotting in her hair, and the kiss stopped being gentle and became fierce, all in a single moment, like tinder flaring into a blaze. Clary heard a sound like a sigh rush through the court, all around them, a wave of noise. But it meant nothing, was lost in the rush of her blood through her veins, the dizzying sense of weightlessness in her body. Jace's hands moved from her hair, slid down her spine. She felt the hard press of his palms against her shoulder blades, and then he pulled away, gently disengaging himself, drawing her hands away from his neck and stepping back. For a moment, Clary thought she might fall. She felt as if something essential had been torn away from her, an arm or a leg, and she stared at Jace in blank astonishment. What did he feel? Did he feel nothing? She didn't think she could bear it if he felt nothing. He looked back at her, and when she saw the look on his face, she saw his eyes at Renwick's, when he had watched the portal that had separated him from his home shatter into a thousand irretrievable pieces. He held her gaze for a split second, then looked away from her, the muscles in his throat working. His hands were clenched into fists at his sides.
Was that good enough? He called,
turning to face the queen and the courtiers behind her.
Did that entertain you?
The queen had a hand across her mouth, half covering a smile.
We are quite entertained, she said. But not, I think, so much as the both of you.
I can only assume, said Jace, that mortal emotions amuse you because you have none of your own.
The smile slipped from her mouth at that.
Easy, Jace, said Isabel. She turned to Clary. Can you leave now? Are you free?
Clary went to the door, and was not surprised to find no resistance barring her way. She stood with her hand among the vines and turned to Simon. He was staring at her as if he'd never seen her before.
"We should go," she said, "before it's too late."
"It's already too late," he said.
Meliorn led them from the Seely Court and deposited them back in the park, all without speaking a single word. Clary thought his back looked stiff and disapproving. He turned away after they'd splashed out of the pond, without even a goodbye for Isabel, and disappeared back into the wavering reflection of the moon. Isabel watched him go with a scowl. "He is so broken up with." Jace made a sound like a choked laugh and flipped the collar of his wet jacket. They were all shivering. The cold night smelled like dirt and plants and human modernity. Clary almost thought she could scent the iron on the air. The ring of city surrounding the park sparked with fierce lights, ice blue, cold green, hot red, and the pond lapped quietly against its dirt shores. The moon's reflection had moved to the pond's far edge and quivered there as if it were afraid of them.
"We'd better get back."
Isabel drew her still wet coat closer around her shoulders, "before we freeze to death."
"It's going to take forever to get back to Brooklyn," Clary said. "Maybe we should take a taxi."
"Or we could just go to the Institute," suggested Isabel. At Jace's look, she said quickly, "No one's there anyway. They're all in the Bone City looking for clues. It'll just take a second to stop by and grab your clothes, change into something dry. Besides, the Institute is still your home, Jace."
"It's fine," Jace said, to Isabel's evident surprise. "There's something I need from my room there anyway."
Clary hesitated. "I don't know. I might just grab a cab back with Simon." Maybe if they spent a little time alone together, she could explain to him what had happened down in the Seely Court, and that it wasn't what he thought. Jace had been examining his watch for water damage. Now he looked at her, eyebrows raised.
"That might be a little difficult," he said, "seeing that he left already."
"He what?" Clary whirled around and stared. Simon was gone. The three of them were alone by the pond. She ran a little way up the hill and shouted his name. In the distance she could just see him, striding purposefully away along the concrete path that led out of the park and onto the avenue. She called out to him again, but he didn't turn around.
Chapter 9. And Death Shall Have No Dominion. Isabel had been telling the truth. The Institute was entirely deserted. Almost entirely, anyway. Max was asleep on the red couch in the foyer when they came in. His glasses were slightly askew, and he clearly hadn't meant to fall asleep. There was a book open on the floor where he'd dropped it, and his sneakered feet dangled over the couch's edge in a manner that looked as if it were probably uncomfortable. Clary's heart went out to him immediately. He reminded her of Simon at the age of 9 or 10, all glasses and awkward blinking and ears.
"Max is like a cat. He can sleep anywhere."
Jace reached down and plucked the glasses from Max's face, setting them down on a squat inlaid table nearby. There was a look on his face Clary had never seen before, a fierce protective gentleness that surprised her.
"Oh, leave this stuff alone. You'll just get mud on it," said Isabel crossly, unbuttoning her wet coat.
Her dress clung to her long torso, and water darkened the thick leather belt around her waist. The glitter of her coiled whip was just visible where the handle protruded from the edge of the belt. She was frowning.
"I can feel a cold coming on," she said. "I'm going to take a hot shower."
Jace watched her disappear down the corridor with a sort of reluctant admiration.
"Sometimes she reminds me of the poem. Isabel, Isabel, didn't worry. Isabel didn't scream or scurry."
"Do you ever feel like screaming?" Clary asked him.
"Some of the time."
Jace shrugged off his wet coat and hung it on the peg next to Isabel's.
"She's right about the hot shower, though. I could certainly use one."
"I don't have anything to change into," Clary said, suddenly wanting a few moments to herself.
Her fingers itched to dial Simon's number on her cell phone, find out if he was all right.
"I'll just wait for you here."
"Don't be stupid. I'll lend you a t-shirt."
His jeans were soaked and hung low on his hip bones, showing a strip of pale, tattooed skin between the denim and the edge of his t-shirt. Clary looked away.
"I don't think..."
"Come on." His tone was firm. "There's something I want to show you anyway."
Surreptitiously,
Clary checked the screen on her phone as she followed Jace down the hall to his room. Simon hadn't tried to call. Ice seemed to crystallize inside her chest. Until 2 weeks ago, it had been years since she and Simon had had a fight. Now he seemed to be mad at her all the time. Jace's room was just as she remembered it, neat as a pin and bare as a monk cell. There was nothing about the room that told you anything about Jace. No posters on the wall, no books stacked on the night table. Even the duvet on the bed was plain white. He went to the dresser and pulled a folded long-sleeved blue T-shirt out of a drawer. He tossed it to Clary.
"That one shrank in the wash," he said. "It'll probably still be big on you, but..."
He shrugged.
"I'm going to shower. Yell if you need anything."
She nodded, holding the shirt across her chest as if it were a shield. He looked as if he were about to say something else, but apparently thought better of it. With another shrug, he disappeared into the bathroom, closing the door firmly behind him. Clary sank down onto the bed, the shirt across her lap, and pulled her phone out of her pocket. She dialed Simon's number. After 4 rings, it went to voicemail.
"Hi, you've reached Simon. Either I'm away from the phone or I'm avoiding you. Leave me a message, and..." "What are you doing?"
Jace stood in the open doorway of the bathroom. Water ran loudly in the shower behind him, and the bathroom was half full of steam. He was shirtless and barefoot, damp jeans riding low on his hips, showing the deep indentations above his hip bones, as if someone had pressed their fingers to the skin there. Clary snapped her phone closed and dropped it onto the bed.
"Nothing. Checking the time."
"There's a clock next to the bed," Jace pointed out. "You were calling the mundane, weren't you?"
"His name is Simon." Clary wadded Jace's shirt into a ball between her fists. "And you don't have to be such a bastard about him all the time. He's helped you out more than once." Jace's eyes were lidded, thoughtful. The bathroom was rapidly filling with steam, making his hair curl more. He said,
"And now you feel guilty because he's run off. I wouldn't bother calling him. I'm sure he's avoiding you."
Clary didn't try to keep the anger out of her voice. "And you know this because you and he are so close?"
"I know it because I saw the look on his face before he took off," Jace said. "You didn't. You weren't looking at him. But I was."
Clary raked her still dank hair out of her eyes. Her clothes itched where they clung to her skin, and she suspected she smelled like the bottom of a pond, and she couldn't stop seeing Simon's face when he looked at her in the Sealy Court, as if he hated her.
"It's your fault," she said suddenly, rage gathering around her heart. "You shouldn't have kissed me like that."
He had been leaning against the doorframe. Now he stood up straight.
"How should I have kissed you? Is there another way you like it?"
"No."
Her hands trembled in her lap. They were cold, white, wrinkled by water. She laced her fingers together to stop the shaking.
"I just don't want to be kissed by you."
"It didn't seem to me that either of us had a choice in the matter."
"That's what I don't understand," Clary burst out. "Why did she make you kiss me? The queen, I mean, why force us to do that? What pleasure could she possibly have gotten out of it?"
"You heard what the queen said. She thought she was doing me a favor."
"That's not true."
"It is true. How many times do I have to tell you? The fair folk don't lie."
Clary thought of what Jace had said back at Magnus's. "They'll find out whatever it is you want most in the world and give it to you, with a sting in the tail of the gift that will make you regret you ever wanted it in the first place."
"Then she was wrong."
"She wasn't wrong." Jace's tone was bitter. "She saw the way I looked at you, and you at me, and Simon at you, and she played us like the instruments we are to her."
"I don't look at you," Clary whispered.
"What?"
"I said I don't look at you."
She released the hands that had been clasped together in her lap. There were red marks where her fingers had gripped each other.
"At least I try not to."
His eyes were narrowed, just a glint of gold showing through the lashes, and she remembered the first time she had seen him and how he had reminded her of a lion, golden and deadly.
"Why not? Why do you think?"
Her words were almost soundless, barely a whisper.
"Then why?" His voice shook.
"Why all this with Simon? Why keep pushing me away, not letting me near you?"
"Because it's impossible," she said. And the last word came out as a sort of wail,
despite her efforts at control.
You know that as well as I do.
Because you're my sister, Jace said. She nodded without speaking.
Possibly, said Jace. And because of that, you've decided your old friend Simon makes a useful distraction?
It's not like that, she said. I love Simon.
Like you love Luke, said Jace. Like you love your mother.
No.
Her voice was as cold and pointed as an icicle.
Don't tell me what I feel.
A small muscle jumped at the side of his mouth.
I don't believe you.
Clary stood up. She couldn't meet his eyes, so instead she fixed her gaze on the thin, star-shaped scar on his right shoulder, a memory of some old injury. This life of scars and killing, Hodge had said once. You have no part in it.
Jace, she said, why are you doing this to me?
Because you're lying to me, and you're lying to yourself.
Jace's eyes were blazing, and even though his hands were stuffed into his pockets, she could see that they were knotted into fists. Something inside Clary cracked and broke, and words came pouring out.
What do you want me to tell you? The truth?
The truth is that I love Simon like I should love you, and I wish he was my brother and you weren't, but I can't do anything about that, and neither can you.
Or do you have some ideas since you're so goddamn smart?
Jace sucked a breath in, and she realized he had never expected her to say what she'd just said, not in a million years. The look on his face said as much. She scrambled to regain her composure.
Jace, I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
No, you're not sorry. Don't be sorry.
He moved toward her, almost tripping over his feet. Jace, who never stumbled, never tripped over anything, never made an ungraceful move. His hands came up to cup her face. She felt the warmth of his fingertips, millimeters from her skin, knew she ought to pull away, but stood frozen, staring up at him.
You don't understand, he said. His voice shook. I've never felt this way about anyone. I didn't think I could. I thought the way I grew up, my father...
To love is to destroy, she said numbly. I remember.
I thought that part of my heart was broken, he said.
And there was a look on his face as he spoke as if he were surprised to hear himself saying these words, saying my heart.
Forever. But you...
Jace, don't.
She reached up and covered his hand with hers, folding his fingers into her own.
It's pointless.
That's not true.
There was desperation in his voice.
If we both feel the same way...
It doesn't matter what we feel. There's nothing we can do.
She heard her voice as if a stranger were speaking. Remote, miserable.
Where would we go to be together? How could we live?
We could keep it a secret.
People would find out. And I don't want to lie to my family. Do you?
His reply was bitter.
What family? The Lightwoods hate me anyway.
No, they don't. And I could never tell Luke. And my mother? What if she woke up? What would we say to her? This, what we want, it would be sickening to everyone we care about.
Sickening?
He dropped his hands from her face as if she'd pushed him away. He sounded stunned.
What we feel, what I feel, it's sickening to you?
She caught her breath at the look on his face.
Maybe, she said in a whisper. I don't know.
Then you should have said that to begin with.
Jace.
But he was gone from her, his expression shut and locked like a door. It was hard to believe he'd ever looked at her another way.
I'm sorry I said anything then.
His voice was stiff, formal.
I won't be kissing you again. You can count on that.
Clary's heart did a slow, purposeless somersault as he moved away from her, plucked a towel off the top of the dresser, and headed back toward the bathroom.
But, Jace, what are you doing?
Finishing my shower. And if you've made me run through all the hot water, I'll be very annoyed.
He stepped into the bathroom, kicking the door shut behind him. Clary collapsed onto the bed and stared up at the ceiling. It was as blank as Jace's face had been before he turned his back on her. Rolling over, she realized she was lying on top of his blue shirt. It even smelled like him, like soap and smoke and coppery blood.
Curling around it like she'd once curled around her favorite blanket when she was very small, she closed her eyes. In the dream, she looked down on shimmering water, spread